Injury and violence prevention consultant, is a subject matter expert to a California campaign, and she'll talk about the San Diego campaign today. Dr. Rob Bossert is at the VA Center for Excellence in Suicide Prevention, serving as acting associate director and chief of the Epidemiology and Populations Research Corps, also an assistant professor in psychiatry at University of Rochester Medical Center. He's a researcher, focuses on suicide surveillance, including the development of large integrated data sets to understand suicide risk and model multi-level risk factors, and also evaluates universal prevention strategies at the VA, including the campaign that he'll talk about today, and also Project ChildSafe, which is a gun safety log distribution program. And then Ashley Womble will be our last presenter. She's the Director of Communications for the Mental Health Association of New York City, which operates the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. Mental Health Association of NYC is a nonprofit organization that addresses mental health needs in New York City and across the nation. And she helped to create the You Matter campaign for the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline that she'll be talking about this morning. And that's designed to let young adults know their lives matter and that help is available if they're struggling with suicide. So I will go first as the first presenter here. So this is all of our sessions. Figure out how to page down here. And so my session is really intended as an introduction and a framing session for the other three. And it's sort of to take a step back and to say, what is the current state of messaging on suicide prevention? What does research tell us that we should be doing around suicide prevention communications? And I'm on Twitter at Linda Langford if you'd like to tweet nice things during my talk. I have no relationships to disclose. So going back to 2001, when we first had a national strategy for suicide prevention, and I'm calling that the old national strategy for suicide prevention because it's since been revised, there were really sort of two different prongs of initiatives that would shape public perceptions about suicide. So one of the goals in the first national strategy was goal 9, was really focused on news and entertainment media, kind of improving the way that suicide and related issues were portrayed in news articles, sort of traditional and online news articles, and then also in entertainment and television and movies, et cetera. Second goal was goal 1, and that read, promote awareness that suicide is a public health problem that's preventable. And that goal 1 really shaped public messaging in the field for a little more than a decade. And so one question is sort of, where are we now? Where should we be going with messaging? So there's been a number of efforts to change and improve news and entertainment coverage. There's a set of recommendations for the news media that are at reportingonsuicide.org. You can find them there. A lot of efforts to disseminate those. More work needed, definitely. There's also an array of different guidelines for people who are entertainment writers and who are working in the entertainment industry to shape stories. But a few years ago, people started to say, you know, we need to also really look more at that public messaging side. And where are we there? So I'm really defining public messaging very broadly. So today we're going to talk a lot about campaigns, but there's lots of other messaging that people are doing that goes out into the public domain. So organizations have websites, they have social media presence, they advertise for fundraisers. There's lots of other materials that are shaping the public dialogue around suicide. What public messaging does not include are clinical interactions, therapeutic interactions, private one-on-one conversations, even one-on-one conversations with legislators isn't public messaging. It's not going out into the public domain. And clinical training clinicians to interact, to assess and manage suicide risk with patients, for example, is not part of public messaging. So we're really talking about that whole, broader array of information that's going into the general public. So what does the research say? A lot of the points that I'll make are discussed in a paper that myself and some co-authors put out in January of this year that was specific specifically applying the research to the military and veteran context, but a lot of the points are very similar for suicide prevention messaging broadly. And then the slides, as well as a bibliography and resource list, are posted on the APHA site. So what does the research say? Well, first, there's a body of research on media coverage showing that some types of media coverage can actually increase suicide risk among vulnerable individuals, sort of the so-called contagion or copycat suicide. And so that's given rise to a set of recommendations for the media on reporting on suicide, and also a kind of parallel set of points on public messaging that are really like don'ts, things that are considered to be unsafe. So things that examples would be providing details about the method or location of a particular suicide, of the personal details of a person who died by suicide. That's to minimize the chance of a vulnerable person identifying with that person who died. Messaging that romanticizes suicide, that normalizes it by presenting it as kind of more common than it is, or more acceptable than it is, or as kind of an acceptable response to adversity. Any kind of data or language suggesting that suicide is inevitable or unsolvable, and kind of things like epidemic and escalating, and hordes of people are dying by suicide, all those kinds of things would be language that would not be helpful to suicide prevention. And then presenting kind of simplistic explanations, that the person was bullied and they killed themselves, without kind of a consideration of the multi-causality of suicide. Second area of literature that's relevant is probably pretty familiar to people who are at APHA, the literature on effective health communication campaigns, social marketing campaigns, etc. And so there's a set of principles outlined here that are, again, kind of in the broader arena of health communications, but not very much known or adhered to by practitioners within the suicide prevention and mental health promotion field. So systematic planning, tying messaging to an overall set of organizational or institutional goals, picking a defined audience, not sort of messaging to everybody, but defining and segmenting an audience and having clear, focused messages. If it's a behavior change message, having that clear call to action, making sure that your efforts are informed by audience research, picking channels that will reach your audience, and making sure there's a sufficient exposure, and then evaluating. There's some, not enough, but some specific research on suicide and mental health campaigns. There's a whole set of so-called mental health literacy campaigns that kind of provide basic information about mental health diagnoses, about treatments, et cetera. Those tend to find, the results of evaluations tend to find that those can improve knowledge and attitudes. For example, a belief that treatment can be effective, but in general don't necessarily translate to changes in behavior, like increases in help seeking, when those are used alone. So they need to be combined with other things like training providers and reaching out to family members and kind of a whole set of interventions. Not very many evaluations of suicide prevention campaigns, but there are a couple of studies that show that promoting a hotline number can increase calls to that hotline number. So again, we don't always know exactly who's calling in the studies that we have so far, whether they're the people at most at risk, but it's a kind of relatively simple call to action that people, that the evidence suggests people can pick up on. Stigma reduction, this has been a few whole other sessions at the conference, so I'm going to not do a thorough job here, but just a couple of points on messaging, because a lot of times people say the reason I'm doing public communications about suicide is I want to reduce stigma. So one kind of key idea is that stigma has a lot of different concepts within it. There's a lot of different aspects to it. There are sort of cognitive, affective, and behavioral components. So stereotypes, prejudice, and discrimination refer to those different components. There's public stigma, what the public feels about people in a stigmatized group. Self-stigma, what the people in the stigmatized group kind of applying those stereotypes, prejudice, and discrimination to themselves. And this concept of label avoidance, of not acknowledging something is wrong or not pursuing help in order to avoid being labeled with a mental health diagnosis. So making sure, you know, in terms of a public messaging campaign, making sure that to identify which of the components is being addressed by the campaign. Just a couple of points on, in general, what works about stigma, that sort of bits of factual information alone don't necessarily change stigma on their own. Just kind of having more information doesn't necessarily address stigma, although it can contribute to a reduction in stigma. Again, tying them to specific goals consistent with the communication literature. And the third bullet really refers to what are called contact approaches, messages about and stories about the word consumers here that they use. This refers to mental health consumers of mental health services. That having kind of stories and positive messages about their full lives and not just about their diagnosis is helpful in reducing stigma and discrimination. And again, a lot of times that's combined with education. Looking at the literature, there are also a number of guidelines and best practices that are out there. Not all are exactly research-based, some are more practice-based, but there are particular kinds of guidelines that some are, of which pertain to suicide specifically and some of which don't, that if people are messaging about suicide prevention, it's good to pay attention to the fact that there's these guidelines. So if you're doing social media, there's lots of resources on doing a good social media campaign. And the AAS video guidelines that refers to the American Association of Suicidology has some guidelines for videos. So again, making sure that if you're not doing a video, that's not relevant to you, but if you are, it's good to know that there's a guideline out there for that. So these are just examples, there's lots more of these. So in recent years, a number of people in the field have really identified a need for change in suicide prevention messaging. And so where does that come from? The first source is Charting the Future. It was a progress review of the 2001 National Strategy in preparation for the revision of the National Strategy that occurred in 2012. And they reviewed Goal 1, the public awareness goal. Some public opinion surveys that are out there, and then an expert panel that we held in January of 2013. And actually, Inara and Ashley were both part of that. So collectively, what do these sources tell us? First, the safety guidelines aren't always followed in public messaging. So Charting the Future, as part of that review, they did a content review of a sampling of messages and found that some of the messages were generally consistent with suicide prevention goals, but there was also concerning content from a safety standpoint. And people send me things all the time because I'm doing this work, and I'll show you a couple images in a minute. A lot of them are just from a safety standpoint, not what we would want to see. Second thing is that best practices in communications that I outlined a few minutes ago, that very often suicide prevention messages are not designed with those best practices in mind. And that is reflected in the revised goal in the national strategy that came out in 2012. So goal one changed to goal two, and now it talks about research-informed communication efforts. And if you read the description of that in the national strategy, it's much more in line with best practices in communications. There aren't a lot of public opinion polls out there around this issue, but there's a few. There was a national poll that just had two questions in a larger set of questions. There was a phone survey in Kentucky and then a phone survey in California that Inara, I think, played a role in giving feedback on questions. And I know we have Sarah here from California. So in general, the public endorses these kind of general ideas about that suicide is preventable, that everyone should have a role, that suicide is a problem. So kind of at the superficial level, we don't have to convince people of that necessarily. Where it looks like there's more of a gap is when you ask people questions about how to take action on that. So in a way, maybe we've done our job with you know, the first goal one, you know, that suicide is a preventable public health issue. People seem to subscribe to that in a general way, but it doesn't mean that they know how to act on that. So kind of one of the ideas is we need to kind of make a transition in our messaging. The expert panel kind of elaborated on that and said, you know, messages could really promote prevention in more effective ways. That a lot of the focus of our messaging has been on the severity of the problem. On this many people die, there's these sort of tragic effects, here are individual stories that are very tragic. So we've really messaged a lot about suicide and not as much about suicide prevention. And so the one of the ways some of us have started to talk about it is that we're sort of collectively creating this kind of a little negative and hopeless narrative about suicide, right? That it's escalating, that it's kind of dramatically bad and there's nothing we can do about it. Clearly not enough stories of hope and recovery and resilience are getting out there in general. Again, these sort of studies of suicide deaths are very common. There's one study about the protective, can news coverage be protective? And the one type of coverage that was protective was stories about of people who coped with adversity without suicidal behavior. And so that kind of underscores the need to get those kinds of stories out there. And then we could be more proactive in shaping the conversation. We've been sort of reactive in a way, and that we could promote prevention more effectively. So this isn't to pick out any particular messages, but if you kind of take a step back and look at these kinds of images as a whole, this is the kind of messaging that's out there a lot. So every 40 seconds, one person commits suicide somewhere in the world. The yellow ribbon twisted into a noose to, you know, kind of raise awareness about veteran suicide. Language like disability, death, and dollars, devastating illness, kind of without the counter story in there. If there's a call to, a lot of times there's no call to action. If it's present, a lot of times it's vague, like this, speak up, reach out, but without any way of knowing how to take action on that. And then very often messages aren't kind of connected with other programmatic efforts, so there's a call to action, see your doctor, but we know that a lot of times clinicians are not trained in how to assess and manage suicide risk, so we want to make sure that our calls to action are able to be complemented by other efforts. This is a pretty typical kind of mix of things. You have depression. This is we compiled this. This is a composite based on things we've seen. Depression, not a normal part of getting older. There's help and hope. Those are fine. A checklist. That's great. Call your doctor. So there's a call to action there. And then on the back, you flip it over, and there's these messages that kind of seem to counteract the idea that there's help and hope. And if you look at the bottom, it says, a vast majority of men who've killed themselves have done the call to action and obviously were helped. And so again, kind of undermining our own positive messages with this other kinds of information. And then really saying, you know, at this point, we do need to say the words, you know, we need to name diagnoses and educate people about those. We need to say the word suicide, but for some audiences, we might need to use other language in order to engage them. So here's a couple of examples of people who did that. So there are campaigns out there that were kind of more thoughtfully designed, that are tailored, that are research and theory based, that are safe, that kind of convey positive messages. My caveat is always for people to, you know, look to see whether there's evaluation data, because again, this is a new field and not everything is evaluated, and not every campaign would be a fit for every context. So sort of for people, if they're looking at other campaigns, to think about, well, what's the problem I'm trying to solve, and is this campaign designed to do it? So we're going to hear from three campaigns today that were very thoughtfully designed using research, using best practices. But before I go to that, I just want to give you a sneak peek of the work that I'm doing with the National Action Alliance for Suicide Prevention. We're creating what we're calling a framework for successful messaging. And I hope it all makes sense to you based on this introduction. So one of the initial priorities of the National Action Alliance, it's a national public-private partnership, in four initial priorities, and one of them was this idea of changing the public conversation about suicide and suicide prevention and kind of shifting to these more positive narratives. So there's, again, the media and entertainment side and also the public messaging side, and that's really what the framework is about. So here's the debut of the graphic that we just created for it. So it's got that strategy piece. Why are you messaging? Who's your audience? What do you hope to accomplish? The safety piece, make sure to avoid the unhelpful things. Add a more positive narrative in whatever way makes sense for your messaging. Tell a story of somebody who's been resilient, who has coped. Hope and help, call to action, whatever the version is that makes sense. And then follow any guidelines that exist for your type of messaging. So that website isn't up yet, but it's about to be up, and within a couple months. And so we hope you'll visit it.